Hi there, everyone. This is James and Vanna sitting together for the It's Your Move podcast. And today we're going to be talking some more about Leviticus. Vanna. I guess maybe just to start off, and you can give us a little maybe a little bit of a recap or what have you. But so we're doing the story of the Bible. We started with six acts, and you know, we've kind of moved forward, and then we're stopping here at Leviticus, and we are having an extended time on a book that I don't know if you ever thought you'd even do one lesson on.
Let alone
six. Why are we here?
Sorry, it's not six.
Six. Plus.
Yes, I said that last time, but I noticed that you didn't pick up on that.
So why are we camping out on Leviticus?
There's probably a number of reasons. Some quick ones would be, I don't see myself teaching on this quite quickly again necessarily in the next 10 years. So I thought, if we do it, why don't we do it well?
Yes.
Why do this well? Well, as I try to get my head around some of it with the sanctification of Israel, I just read more and more, studied more and more, and eventually thought, what I've learned here doesn't justify a class or two. Mm-hmm. And then three would be the importance, I think we mentioned in the previous podcast, of if you look at the tabernacle temple structure, that was over a span of, let's say, maybe around about 1,200 years that this was functional.
Yes.
That's an enormous amount of time.
Yes.
To not know and understand it. And then four would be, and my guess is, and we'll get to that some point next year, that what many people don't necessarily know or see that clearly is that Jesus came to call judgment on the temple.
Mm.
That was one of his key messages in bringing the kingdom to earth as it is in heaven, was calling judgment on the temple and the temple structure. Now, we immediately view that now as grace versus law, which I don't think it is at all. But in order to make that connection at some point next year, or to better make that connection at some point next year, you have to understand how the temple structure was at least supposed to function.
Yes.
Versus then how it ended up functioning by the time that Jesus came, which was a very different picture.
Yes. Okay, cool. Now, I like that, and I think it's, I guess it's important for, you know, for us as a family to, I guess in some ways, to be patient here and to do our work and really trying to dig deep and understand what this was all about and the world that Jesus entered, and also what it was supposed to be, what the Hebrew religion was supposed to be at the time versus what it was.
And I'll even throw number five in there, is to relieve some of the agony in reading it.
Mm.
So historically, every time that I've tried to read through the scriptures and say to myself, go read from Genesis straight through, my hiccups would come around about Exodus 21, the Book of the Covenant, but then more tabernacle construction that sort of runs through to first telling us how it should be constructed and then going through every step, and then the system of Leviticus that it's not written for easy reading.
Yes.
And I was hoping that as we go through this structure that at least would give you some lenses to look through to be able to make more sense of what's happening in it.
Mm. Well, I do know a number of people are reading Leviticus, so they didn't maybe read it on your first suggestion, but now they realize there's nowhere for them to go.
We're camping out here for a while. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the ritual sacrifice. I know you did send us the kind of the layout of Leviticus, that diagram, which was very helpful. And at the moment, we're talking about burnt offerings.
Yes.
And the seven rites. Now, we're not all the way through the seven rites yet. We're at rite number three.
We've done three. We're doing this Sunday. We're doing four, five, six.
Okay. You sure you don't want to do a Sunday each while we're stretching things out?
Then the seventh rite, I should not give too much away. Maybe we'll touch on seven.
Okay. Okay. So, and I know one of the points that you did make about kind of looking at the burnt offering specifically was, yes, we're looking at that as a kind of offering and the various rites, but also that it's in some ways a template for the other ritual sacrifices, and there's kind of similarities and parallels and differences. So I do think it's helpful.
So you'll see in the six rites, we've done three. Let's call it six plus one.
Yes.
Okay. Because it's seven, but when I do the seventh one, you'll see why it says 6 plus 1. At this stage, you just need to live with 6 plus 1.
Yes.
But when you look at the 6 rites, and we continue, because at some point we, in the near future, we're going to just, as quickly as we can, go through the other 4 ritual sacrifices.
Yes.
Which is the grain, the fellowship, the sin, and the guilt offerings. Then if you have this lens where you see the rites and you understand the rites, you will see, you'll quickly pick up on that through the other texts as well.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at those things, you'll say, oh, here is the, let me not use one that I've not used. Here's the presentation rite, or you'll see here's the hand leaning rite.
Yes, yes, perfect. No, perfect. Okay, well, if we just had to look at kind of where we are with the different rites, the first one, which we started looking at actually 2 weeks ago, and then carried on kind of looking at a little bit more deeply this last Sunday, was this choose the animal.
Yes.
The fluffy, the three-legged.
Yes, yeah. the muscular one.
The superhero. And this idea of kind of dual, there were 2 reasons why the blameless or the blemish-free animal was to be chosen. Mm. Take us through those 2 reasons.
Okay, I'm not saying there were 2 reasons. I'm saying there could be 2 reasons. There could be more.
Mm.
These are, and sort of around things that I've been reading and thinking about, 2 obvious ones.
Yes.
There could certainly be more.
Yes.
But 2 obvious ones would be that the gift is a reflection of, it's my reflection of the one that I'm giving to.
Yes.
And the second one is that it's supposed to be blameless on my behalf. That's why it's called Tamim. That's why I must get something blameless, because I'm not blameless.
Yes.
Which we get into that in the hand leaning, right?
Yes.
So those would be the 2 ones. So on the reflection one, you don't even need to be a biblical theologian to figure this out, where the gift reflects your view of the person. For any of us, we have various circles of friendships or relationships. We spoke about this earlier, where if you're dating or married or whatever, and you're madly in love with someone, usually, if you give this person a gift, the gift will reflect that.
Yes.
Then you've got a close circle of friends where, again, the gift will reflect that. And the wider you go down that circle, someone might get a birthday card, or they might not. They might just get a happy birthday.
Yes.
Okay, you're not meaning to insult the person, but it does say something about, if you're very near and dear to me and I have the means to treat you, I obviously would want to treat you well.
Yes, yes.
Give you a good treat. Give you something that would be like, when you open the gift, it would be like, wow, and not sort of a wow, it's like, wow, really? Is this what you're giving me?
Yes. Can we just stop there for a second? So, I mean, would you say that in a scenario where you've got a disciple who, and let's just get straight to the time, talent, and treasure point, is not giving their best by any stretch of the imagination, and they know it. I mean, would you say that the core of that is their view of God?
Sure. Well, one is, do they know it?
Mm.
So I'm not sure how you get to the place where, in your comment here, that you actually they do know it.
Yes.
So it's, do they know it, or do they really know it? We're back to that. I know I have a problem. I know that my problem is indeed a problem.
Yes.
So which one are they there? At the core, sure, I think it's difficult to say, to be that definitive and say that is the core.
Mm.
Is that part of the core?
Mm.
It must be. I mean, it's that idea of Paul saying, and we no longer live for ourselves, but for him who died for us.
Yes.
It's that because they get the idea that Jesus gave his life as a sacrifice, which I know we also need to unpack at some point, has an effect.
Mm-hmm.
So it has an effect. So if I... we go back to what we said on Sunday on look at Isaiah's response with holy, 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 okay, or Peter's response, we didn't mention this on Sunday, but away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man, or John's response in Revelation, I fell down as though dead. That is someone who has a connection with what is in front of them.
Yes.
Okay. And Isaiah saying, oh my word, what must I do? You know, I'm a man of unclean lips and living among a people unclean lips. So there is the ability to see glory.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that here's another example that I've heard someone use once, loosely, I can't remember the exact detail, but it's the idea, if you Myself and the kids recently, and Alistair and Matt climbed Lion's Head.
Yes.
And you get to the top, and what happens when you get to the top? There's a wow.
Yes, yes.
There's a wow moment where it's just like, wow. There's not, I don't have to go up and think I'm supposed to say wow.
Mm-mm-mm.
I see the wow.
Mm-mm-mm.
Now, a blind person might go up and not say wow because they don't see the wow.
Mm-mm-mm.
And so you don't get a wow because you don't see the wow.
Mm-mm-mm.
And I don't know if that makes sense. So the gift, whether it's time, treasure, or talent, it's not all, but certainly a reflection of that, of the wow.
Yeah, yes.
So wow, I give my time to this. Wow, I give my talent to this.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I give my finances to this. Versus, I don't really want to talk about finances. Finances is not the focus here at all. It's just by chance in the text.
Yes.
But it's this idea of, when am I safe in my giving? If I give 10%, am I okay?
Yeah.
That's a complete wrong way of thinking.
Yes.
Okay. As in, that's not wow.
Mm-hmm.
That is, how do I tick a box?
Mm-hmm.
What is the minimum that I can do to order to be, in my mind, accepted, which is a skewed theology in itself for another day. But that's not the wow. So yeah, I do think that there's some distortion, and it could be for many obviously the list of reasons as to why it could be distorted could be multiple. It could be sin, could be distraction, could be overwhelmness in life and anxiety, which is back attached to sin and not trusting God. It could be a ton of things. But there's definitely a wow factor missing. And that is, I believe, true for you, and is definitely true for me, where I can see it in myself when the wow factor is there or not.
Totally. No, it's a powerful thought, and it's a challenging thought. I think it's, you know, as a young Christian, that wow was a lot easier to come by, you know, reading scriptures for the first time and hearing sermons, and wow, no one had ever preached like that before, and I feel so, you know, inspired and challenged and this and that and the other, and seeing the miracles. And I think over time it's very easy for that wow to go, and with it
everything else.
Yeah, all of a sudden, you know, it's not feeling so wild, so here's my three-legged sheep, because you know, for all kinds of reasons. And I think it's something I guess we need to really just keep fighting for, otherwise we just become religious, we lose the wow. Scary.
Yeah, I've often heard it said, I must have certainly said it myself before, that it was easier when we were young Christians. And there's only some truth in that, because when we were young Christians, what it tells you, okay, certainly this was my journey and everyone had a different journey, is when I first saw some of these truths, it was definitely wow. And there was, from my side, a relentless pursuit of it.
Yes.
In other words, oh my word, I need to get to know this. Now, that's part of built into my personality, but I need to get to know this. Now then, I got to know X amount of things over the years, but did I continue to have the desire and pursuit to know God better?
Right.
If I did, I would continue to find new things.
Yes.
And because I'm limited in my own ability to see, I would pursue others that are able to see better than me.
Yes.
So I keep I'm the one that can keep the dream alive, as in a marriage.
Yes, yes.
You keep the dream alive or you don't.
Yeah. 100%.
But it's not, but I can't just say, oh, you know, the years have rolled by and so it's so much harder now, poor me. I mean, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Poor me, it's so hard for me to be wowed by God.
Totally.
Again, there's something inherently wrong with that.
Totally. And I mean, even in marriage, I mean, I am a student of marriage. I find it a fascinating relationship. But there is a difference between those who, over the years, their marriage has got more radiant and stronger and they're more in love than they ever were, versus those that have drifted apart. But the difference is in the investment, is in the fighting for it. It's in the fighting for it. So now, what about this on my behalf? So my sheep is now representing me. I thought it was a great point on the bull, the sheep, the bird. And you said, I mean, even I don't know where the grain will come to grain offerings or what have you later. But you know, this idea of, okay, there is also an element of my offering that is a representation of me. I don't know if there's too much, because they do interlink, but there is something quite powerful about the idea of me not feeling the pressure to give more than what God has given me in terms of time, talent, and money.
Totally, and I'm not sure if that was clear enough on the boss message, and it's obviously always difficult in X amount of time to make everything very clear.
Yeah.
Because I think people are feeling, where does grace come in? Or some people are feeling, where does grace come in? And grace, one, that's a podcast in itself, but so God's favor or God's mercy, or God's grace, his favor or his mercy comes in that God is not looking at a dude standing between a bunch of birds and saying, where's the bull?
Mm.
And that is his grace, is he is offering opportunity for everyone within their means to approach him.
Yeah.
Okay. And so if I have a bunch of bulls, then that means would be a bull. If I have a bunch of sheep, the means would be sheep. If I don't have that, then either, I'm not sure if people farmed with birds, either it's had a bunch of doves, or you're supposed to go and catch one. The text doesn't obviously say that, and then there's a grain offering. But the grace comes in that everyone's welcome.
Mm, mm, mm.
And everyone has an opportunity to follow God's way into his presence.
Mm, mm, mm.
But then I need to follow the way into his presence, not create my own.
Yes.
So in other words, I cannot have a bunch of bulls and bring a bird. Mm-hmm. That will not be acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Or I cannot have a bunch of bulls and I bring the crippled bull, unless that was
the best
that I had. I'm not sure how that would have worked, but unless that was the best, that doesn't seem to be the deal in the scriptures, that people were trying to palm off second best,
yes,
or third best, or fourth best, or even half dead.
Yes, yes. No, hectic. And look, you know, we'll maybe circle back there just now, because I think as we do look at these things, you know, we're looking at it specifically here through the lens of what it meant to be part of God's people.
Mm.
At the time and what he was communicating to them. But it's always kind of, there's a, I guess, at the back of our minds as disciples, there's this window of, okay, but now, you know, we've got Jesus, things mm. things are different, and kind of, you know, I guess understanding those in context, I do think we need to continue to unpack that as we go on with these because I think for myself, I'm trying to put myself into the shoes of a Hebrew here and what it meant to be a Hebrew. But I mean, it really doesn't change. It doesn't change in terms of what I'm offering to God now.
Yes.
Certainly not in what it means to have an allegiance to God, what it means to be part of his covenant people, what it means to love God with all of my heart, mind, soul, and strength, what it means to have a reverence for God, to be holy. All of those things, you know, the how is obviously different, but the what and the heart behind it is really still the same. Is really still the same.
And offline, you asked me a question in the direction of why are we even doing this, in terms of wasn't Jesus supposed to deal with all of this?
I guess it was, and I know that we're supposed to get to Jesus later, we will get to Jesus later, but I suppose, you know, in looking at all of this,
2025 is coming.
the confusion lies in, yes, I can look at my herd of bulls and decide which ones to sacrifice, but thank goodness Jesus came and was the sacrifice,
yes,
you know, on behalf of, but how does that, even if it's a bit of a cheat sheet, and even if it's just a vague answer, but how do we interpret that? You know, the idea that, you know, Jesus is supposed to be the sacrifice. Why are we talking about our sacrifice?
Yes.
And maybe even point us to a couple of New Testament passages that can help contextualize that.
Well, I think it's a little bit more complex than that. That's why I'm doing the story of the Bible by first looking at the Hebrew Bible, to be able to get the proper context, to be able to have a better understanding of what Jesus came and did for us.
Yes.
Or the opportunities that he created. One of that which we touched on is obviously the idea of, and again, I'm not saying my perspective is the only perspective, but the idea of, that I always viewed it, that you laying your hand on the bull or the sheep is you transferring your sin to that sheep. Okay, so the sheep is now dying for your sin because it's not sinful on your behalf.
Mm.
We'll look at it more on the Day of Atonement, but there's some holes in that, because the whole point is you're not supposed to be able to enter God's glory, any space around it, and the holy precinct. You don't send sin into the tent.
Yes. Yes. You send sin out of the camp.
You send sin out of the camp, yeah. So that's part of that. But I think what it is that we're looking at in all these things is, we're not called to give bulls and this and that and this and that, but we do learn from this. We do learn what the heart is expressed in these laws, what the heart is that God is calling for, and how the hearts could be seen. Okay, so, and their day and time, what God is calling for is He's calling for a blameless bull, a blameless sheep. Now the person comes and I don't give that, or I have a blameless bull, but I give a blameless sheep, or I have a blameless bull, but I give a cronky bull, what have you. What does that say about me? New covenant, old covenant, same deal. Okay. There is something said about me. Okay. My view of God is reflected. New covenant, old covenant, it's the same deal. And where the difference comes in, and I think we sometimes miss this, and we'll get at this at some point in Act 4 and 5, is in the Hebrew Bible, what Jesus, or sorry, what God called people to do is their allegiance to Him was expressed through the temple cult. Okay. It was actually primarily three things: was Torah, temple, land. Okay, so my allegiance to the Torah, first five books, my allegiance to the temple, and then futuristically when they actually get into it, my allegiance to the land. So they would fight tooth and nail for that land. So my allegiance to God is expressed through temple, Torah, land. In the new covenant, where Jesus comes, is all these things, temple, Torah, land, is pointing to Jesus. Okay, they are not the end in themselves. They are pointing to Jesus. So Jesus is the embodiment of temple, Torah, land. Okay, and as He Himself said, I didn't come to abolish, but to fulfill. So He is the embodiment of temple, Torah, land. And so now my allegiance, in a way you could say, and I might know people might find this strange, is actually still to temple, Torah, land, but in the person of Jesus. And so that's where the shift comes. And so what Jesus is now calling people to, and the new covenant and the new testament, is that those things were just pointing to me, and now your allegiance needs to be to me. He didn't come to abolish allegiance. He didn't come to die for our sins so that we wouldn't need to have an allegiance to God anymore. He came to die for our sins to break the power of sin that was preventing us from seeing God for all that He is and giving Him our allegiance and being the true humanity. I don't know if that was too complicated, but
no, makes perfect sense.
That is the deal. So Jesus is the embodiment of these things, not the escape of them. And now, instead of having my allegiance to 613 Torah instructions, and again the word even needs to go, because we in the English Bible is translated as law, which is a poor translation. It's teachings or instructions. That was the Torah. So instead of following and looking at these 613 teachings, I'm now looking to Jesus. And instead of a Jew saying, sure, am I showing my allegiance to God, they're saying, well, am I keeping Torah, am I keeping the 613, am I following the temple sacrifices, ours is, am I keeping my allegiance to Jesus, how He lived, Him being the image, the icon of God, am I following that?
And I mean, there's no doubt if you take some time to look through the Gospels. I mean, there's no dropping of the standard there.
Not at all. And this goes back to, and this would be another podcast as well, which we touched on as well in offline conversations, is this works righteousness. Now, even that thing we need to think about, okay, in terms of what is works righteousness, and did Jesus not call people to obedience? I mean, the scripture is filled with not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only who does the will of my Father. What is that? Works righteousness? So again, we need to rethink even the concept of work righteousness. Now, the work righteousness goes back to, again, my number one objective in life is that I need to get myself into heaven. And so how am I going to get into heaven? I can't get into heaven. So I need to work to get into heaven. I can't work to get into heaven because it's impossible for me to do. So Jesus did the work for me. That's sort of the traditional view. Versus, no, my goal in life is not to get into heaven. My goal in life is to be the icon of God, to be the image of Christ. Sin is preventing me from doing so. And while I'm not the image of Christ, God's garden project cannot go forward, and the world cannot be filled with His glory and flourish the way that He has intended it to be. Jesus comes to break that. I'm not circling back, but Jesus comes to break that in order to set that thing into motion. So the focus of it all, I'm definitely included in this wonderful family. I used this early on in the classes where I said it's the farmer that has a beautiful farm in a desert, and it's just him and his family on the farm. The rest of the world is in the desert, and he is inviting a desert dweller in and saying, hey, do you want to join my loving family? Because our dream is to expand the garden. Our dream is not to have you in the family. We want to include you in our dream and love up on you in our dream while we do this. But if you come and kick the dog and shoot the cow, you're not going to be welcome in the garden.
No, it's powerful. And look, you know, for those of you who are wrestling with some of these things and trying to understand it, and go and, you know, rewind this podcast about five minutes and listen to it again, because I do think it's something that we do need to wrestle with. I do think that one thing that the story of the Bible has done is it's certainly opened my eyes to a number of these kind of interpretative issues where I think I've relied on thinking that's not necessarily in the Bible. It's stuff that's inherited, heard on a podcast, even preached myself, I'm sure, you know, a superficial view on these things. And I think, you know, in reading the Bible in a better way, really, been quite eye-opening.
Amen.
Quite eye-opening. Well, I know we can talk some more about that as time goes on. So, inspection, right?
You were actually sick that day, so you didn't see your cameo appearance.
I did. Was someone sent me a screenshot? But you know, this idea, I thought it was quite clever. This idea of, listen, you know, no one's hiding their cow in the envelope. And kind of slipping it into the temple post box. You know, it was in plain sight. And we live in a world where we kind of don't want people to inspect our sacrifice. Do you think that usually comes from guilt, the fact that we don't want people to see? I mean, I know it's a broad statement.
Yeah, no, it's very broad. But listen, there are multiple reasons why people. Okay, I'm not saying that we should do it. I was not trying to propose that we have you, Mark, and Alistair sit with magnifying glasses and inspecting people's contribution. That's obviously not what I'm saying in it.
I did get some WhatsApps with magnifying glasses. Thanks for that. You're supposed to ask my permission.
Listen, there's a whole array in the pot here of some people obviously feeling, listen, if I earn 10,000 rand a month and you earn 1,000 rand a month, and let's say your gift is, and we're saying, and the Bible doesn't come on in the New Testament for us to tithe, we've been on that avenue, I'm not going to unpack that now, but let's say we are now giving 10%. That's what we are encouraging the fellowship to do, just as a family, for us to function. And you are putting down 100 rand on the table and I'm putting down 1,000 rand on the table, then there is an awkward dynamic between the two of us. And then obviously up the chain or down the chain, there's an awkwardness that feels like, so you have this, I have that. So there can be awkwardness of that. So that's certainly in the mix. But what I found on a personal level is that I don't have a problem if someone asks me something, if I'm doing it.
Yes.
On any given topic.
Yes.
So if you're asking me, hey, Banner, do you and Lisa, do you guys on a regular basis every month, whatever, every year, every month and every year, at least give 10% towards contribution for the church to move forward and what have you, I have no problem answering that because we're doing it. It's when I'm not, then I get uncomfortable. Now, I know that you can have theological reasons around it. I don't actually want this to be a contribution talk personally, but there is the issue of, well, where in the Bible this, that you've got some things to rethink if you think of who we are as a family and what it is that what we're trying to do. But we don't like to be found out. And money is such a sensitive issue. I've taught this many times historically. People would rather ask you, people would feel more comfortable to say, hey, have you watched porn this week, than to ask you what you're giving us.
Yes. Well, let's even move away from giving. I mean, you know, if I had to think of subjects that one easily wants to duck and dodge around, how's it going with your time in the Word?
Time in the Word.
How's it going with your prayer life?
Time into advancement of the kingdom.
Time into advancement of the kingdom. So, are you prioritizing?
So if we were to inspect that,
yes.
Okay. If we were, and I know there's a guilt crew that immediately jumps into guilt, and if that's you, I encourage you, please don't jump into guilt, okay? But if we, it's that idea of, if we were looking for, let's say in the Roman Empire, they were looking for evidence as to who were followers of Jesus, as to who should be killed, okay? Could evidence be found?
Yes.
And the evidence was clear in many ways. People would not burn incense to Caesar. They would not pray to Caesar. The evidence was there. if we were to do an audit on your life and the way that you spend your time,
yes,
knowing that everyone's in a life, a different life phase, knowing that some people have young children, older children, no children, what have you, sickly relatives, all kinds of things. But if we were to look at your life phase where you are and look at that picture and someone were to do an audit on it, would they find you guilty of following Jesus? Would they say that my inspection has shown, I mean, Trump is going through some of these things if you follow the news.
Yeah.
But would the evidence be in, oh, totally, James is guilty as charged. He's his primary thing, although he spends 8 hours a day at work, his primary concern in his life is God and God's purposes.
Yeah.
And we can see it in his schedule. We see it in the free gaps. We see it everywhere.
Yeah.
We see it in the way that he spends his talent.
Yeah.
It's not that his best talent goes to work and then after work, there's nothing left and he gives the scraps.
Yes.
Or does some good stuff on a Sunday. And I appreciate everyone. Listen, I think we've got a wonderful crew doing wonderful things on Sundays, making our Sunday services happen, which I'm incredibly grateful for. But that's one day.
Yeah.
Every day I am to expand the garden.
And I mean, if I had to think of other subjects, marriage, what's really going on in a marriage, often ducking and diving and smoke screening.
Mm.
I think of a compassion to the poor.
Totally.
Kind of hidden away. Oh, yeah, I go to LD and therefore. But, you know, I guess that there are a number of subjects where it's very easy not to want to have anyone inspect because we know that we're not.
And let's take, I know this is, again, offline conversation. You and I have lots of conversation about this, the poor, and how we can be helpful, whatever. Let's take an Aldine. I go to Aldine. What is my heart like at Aldine?
Yeah.
Am I just there, or am I ticking a box?
Yeah.
Am I ticking a box? I am at Aldine, and so now I don't have to help anyone else.
Yeah.
Or I give a guy a sandwich at the traffic light, but am I really changing his life? And I'm not saying don't give the guy a sandwich, but there is more to it. And so these things are good. Now, this is not really the context of what we're speaking of, because we're actually talking about some form of sacrificial effort.
Yes.
Which then takes us back to time, talent, and treasure. Am I making those sacrifices? So that was sort of the arc between the New Testament and Old Testament. And we'll look at a bit of that at the burning rite that's coming on Sunday.
So, okay, so we've got this presentation right, and then there's this hand leaning right.
Yes.
Do we have some time to look at that?
It's not that big, so we've touched on it, so yeah, let's quickly do it.
Okay, so hand leaning, passing our sin on to the animal?
Would be nice.
What was going on? What was the hand leaning right all about?
Again, there are various views and interpretations of this. The jury is still semi-out for me personally on this.
Yeah.
Although this is a big thing that got me started on this a couple of years ago, is that this didn't make sense to me on how that atonement works. And I know there's different forms of atonement. I personally don't think you're passing your sin on to it.
Okay.
On this case.
Yes.
I think that's the case in Leviticus 16 with the scapegoat.
Yes.
But here on the burning one, burnt offering, I personally think is that you're putting your name on it, they're going there on your behalf to be blameless on your behalf. You want to give something blameless, you can't be blameless.
Yes. So it's kind of, this is me, this is representing me. I'm laying my hands on this, you know, on this animal to say, hey, this is my offering here.
Because otherwise, if we wanted to lay our sin in it, why don't you just pick the worst animal? I mean, he's already...
Do you think it's like saying goodbye to your best sheep?
Yeah, I mean, he's already... The worst animal's already on his last leg. I mean, why don't we just dump sin on him and send him to the sacrifice?
Yes.
So there is... And I think what I said on Sunday as well is there's obviously symbolism involved in a lot of these things. Even though, let's say in baptism we're dying with Jesus and participating in his death, burial, and resurrection, there's also symbolism involved in it. Okay? It's not just one or the other. There is symbolism. And I do think there's symbolism involved in these things, as I think I said on Sunday, where when I do this act, when I do the hand-leaning rite, and I'm saying you are going there on my behalf, or I'm giving the sacrifice, there are certain levels of commitment and things and dedication taking place here.
Yes.
Okay, as we'll see in rite 4, 5, and 6 as well.
Mm-mm-mm.
And that I do think that we should have similarities now. I do think that every time that I'm getting up at 5 a.m. to be in the Word with God and with Him in prayer when other people are either sleeping or rushing off to work, whatever it is that they're doing. There's symbolism involved in that as well. Mm. Other than me actually having the time with God and being transformed in His presence by that time and being connected with Him, I am also doing a symbolic act.
Yeah.
I'm also, it's almost like a rededication.
Yeah.
It's like someone going to the gym. Every time they go to the gym, they say, "You're still in."
Yes.
And every time you go to the gym, you say, "I am. I still want to do this. I still want to be fit or do healthy living." But every time you go, it's that recommitment. It's a expression of a symbol of it. And I do think that, again, that's something that we can take from that text as saying, what does that look like for us today? And I don't think for us to prescribe it as a church. I think as an individual to think, now some bare bone basics need to be, listen, be in the Word daily, first thing. And I know complex of schedules, 95% of people can do it if they want to. But I do think there's symbolism. So the hand leaning right for me, that's more, how do we identify ourselves with some of these things?
Very nice. Yeah, and it's funny as you mentioned that, you know, I can think of certain things. For me, that idea of doing it first thing in the morning, reading and praying, it's a, you know, do I think that that's prescribed legalistically in the Bible? No, but you know, it's just always been hard for me to make a case or have someone make the case to me that it's not the best time if you're willing to really think through what would be your first fruits of your day.
Yeah.
What would be the best time of the day? What would give the most legs? The idea of reading just before you go to sleep, you wake up the next morning and you're not thinking about what you've read. And I think of for me, even paying contribution, not debit order, but actually every month, you know, typing that amount in and paying it, for me is it's very symbolic of wanting to contribute, wanting to give away. And as time has gone on and as my career has grown and the amounts have grown, there was a kind of crossover point where you know it becomes more and more painful in some ways, but in other ways it's a symbolic gesture to do that for me, as opposed to debit order, although I do think debit orders can be helpful if you're forgetful.
Yes, because that symbolic act of yours,
yes,
could be a very poor symbolic act.
If it's once every 3 months.
Yes.
Because I forget.
Yes.
It'll make me feel
you forget, or this or that, and oh, no, it's not. Okay, well, 3 months later I remembered, and so, okay, let me actually give 3 months.
Yeah.
So that would not be a good symbolic act for someone.
Yeah.
So I actually do remember. I'm very pro what you're doing. I'm just a debit order guy, because I have too many things in my mind going on to remember everything. But that's again where we need to figure out what works for us in whatever condition that's going to help me. And for me, most probably the primary thing would be good time in the Word and prayer every day.
Yeah.
First thing. So
yeah.
I'm literally committing my day to God. I'm literally saying I'm going into this day with you as my primary, first love, focus, affection, desire, everything. And then some other good decisions would obviously be one another relationships. Again,
yes.
that's for me saying I'm committing myself to meeting with someone consistently in this way, in this manner, as part of my allegiance, as part of me knowing what it is that I need to grow into becoming the image.
Yes. Very cool.
And be of service to others in the same sense of me helping someone else as I'm being helped. But each man to his own and how to figure it. But my years of being around has been, man, those are some bare bones stuff. Daily time, one another, discipling relationship time, church.
Yeah.
That doesn't make you an image bearer or a Christian even. That's a ticket into the game if you want to go anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, after that, we start with kingdom work.
Yeah, yeah. 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 Cool. Vanna, listen, I know we've been talking for a while now, and I even heard some people yawning on the other end of the podcast because we're on 40 minutes here. so maybe any kind of closing thoughts from your side? I know we're going to obviously keep talking about Leviticus some more.
Think, pray, have conversation. Have the ability, and this is difficult for me to do, have the ability to think gray.
Yeah.
In other words, as you hit some bumps in the road, to not jump to conclusion, but rather to mull over it and have conversation about it and think gray. So now it's thinking grace, you're not for or against, you're mulling it over, you're processing. But talk, that's, I think, part of what we need to do is we need to talk. And then obviously we need to talk about what it is that we see. So don't just keep it to yourself. Come back and say, sure, here's what I've realized. I realize I've been giving blemished sacrifices. Here's why I say that this is what I have been doing. I'm barely, I had someone a couple of weeks ago, really appreciated, send me a message saying, hey, I'm spending most of my night watching Netflix. I want to do more. What can I do?
Great.
I think what a great spirit. And then followed up with me. Okay, so in other words, I said, let me think some more about it, then came back to me and said, were you able to think some more about it? And I think that's a wonderful spirit to have.
It's great. It's great. Awesome. Well, Vanna, thank you very much for the time. I know there was a lot there. But yeah, I appreciate the effort that you've put in. And I do think there's something just on what you said of being patient with ourselves, not jumping to conclusions. Is I know you've been reading and wrestling with this stuff for a long, long time now before you've put it into sermons. And I think we also need to be, we need to be patient and willing to take the time to think before we jump into conclusions about ourselves, about church, about all kinds of things. But yeah, this is about you and God, and it's about your relationship with God and trying to figure that out and take it seriously.
Amen.
Amen.
Thanks, everybody.
Cheers,
have a good one.
Bye-bye.